Hello, everyone, and welcome to an exciting edition of Training Unleashed. We've got a great group of people. Before we get started, I want to acknowledge my sponsors, the C-Suite, C-Suite TV, and C-Suite Radio. They are great partners for the show. I take a special shout out to my listeners. I appreciate all of you. We're going to have a really fun show, really interesting show. We have Captain Emil, and I'm not pronouncing his last name because of it. For me, I'm very dyslexic, but I'm going to let him do that. He is a captain of an airplane. He is an airplane captain with the Romanian National Airline, and his author, and I assume by now a really close friend, is also here, and they have wrote a very interesting book. And I'm going to let them tell you about it a little bit more because it's always best to hear from the author. So, Emil, why don't we start off and let you go first, introduce yourself very briefly, and then we'll have Octavian and both pronounce your last names so that we get that right. And I apologize because I wish I was better at pronouncing names. Emil, Captain Emil.
Hello, everyone. Thank you very much. I'm Emil Dobrovolski. I'm a Romanian captain of the Romanian national carrier Tarom, and I'm based in Bucharest. And for the last 29 years or so, I've been flying for Tarom. For the last 20 years or so, I've been an instructor, and for the last 18 years, I've been a type rating examiner. So I'm the person responsible to issue licenses and to check pilots for their skill check. For the skill test, for lots of other checks. So when you see a pilot in their seat in the cockpit, a guy like me, check them before in a simulator or in a flight.
Yeah, and if you're not happy, get off immediately.
It's a great responsibility. You know, we have lots of syllabuses for the training. We have lots of things, the books to guide us. But at the end of the day, if you are not trust that person, the way they perform in the simulator, in the day of their check, if you don't trust them to fly with your family, you know, it's like the question behind everything. If you don't trust them to fly the way they perform in the day of the check, you will not pass them.
Yeah, what makes you actually an amazingly good guest is when you think about it, everyone listening here in some fashion is really advocates for training. Pilots, literally, their training is the difference between life and death. And that when we look at training in the United States, unfortunately, a lot of companies look at it as optional. They don't invest in, they don't do it right. Yet it is actually life and death for their company, right? How they execute in their company, if it's not done right, is critically important. So your background and your knowledge and you know the training, all that is perfect for our audience. Octavian, if you quickly introduce yourself, and I think this is a really cool opportunity to have the writer, they co-wrote the book, but the person who's primarily responsible for the writing, because I think this gives us kind of an intriguing insight. So Octavian?
Hello, Evan. Hello, everyone. Thank you for having us. My name is Octavian Pantis. I've been an international trainer and speaker for 22 years now, and I'm also managing an international training and consulting company operating mostly in Europe, but now with this online world for a year or so, working with customers really around the world on topics such as leadership, productivity, and organizational culture. I've known Emil for more than 10 years now, and together we wrote this book. Let me show it here. It's called Dark Cockpit. If we have time, we can talk about the title there. It's a nonfiction book that taps into the treasure of know-how in aviation, not on technical know-how on how engines work and systems work, but on the know-how on communication, on leadership, on managing crisis, and translates that know-how into applicable advice and guides that all of us can use. Those of us who do not pilot a plane, but who pilot a team, an organization, and our own professional incredible careers. So that's it in a nutshell about me. If I may point out, Evan, one difference, you pointed out very well that training is key in aviation because it's a life and death issue. And what you see in terms of training in aviation, and of course we'll get the chance to discuss this in more detail, especially as opposed to how it happens in many companies, is that there are three keywords. Number one, everyone attends training. It's not just for newcomers, talent pools, leaders. No. It's for everyone. Number two, it's regular. It's not only when we have the budget or when we have the time or when the manager says so or what. No, it's regular. And number three, it's on a wide range of topics, not just on the main ones, not just on what's new, but it's on a wide range because the expectations are very high. When we fly, our expectation is that we'll get from A to B safely first, comfortably also if possible. And to achieve that, many, many things need to be in place. And training is a key part of that. It would not work without training.
And if I may add, you know, things like on the ground or for other domains that are not critical, like training, or let me pick one. It's communications. Everybody knows that communication is important. Everybody knows and blame communications for mishaps or things like this. But in aviation, communication is vital. Communication, I have a word that aviation history was written in blood. So for us, communication and training is vital. The way we communicate, the way that we pass the message unequivocally, the way we manage to understand each other in a dark environment, looking forward, not validating the message with body language or micro gestures or things like this. The way that the challenge and response is in the cockpit, the way we answer to all of this is it's vital. And for us, it's a training. It's a skill you develop over the years, but also it's something we learn in our training. So every pilot every year goes twice to the simulator for 8 hours. So one session is for training, the other session is to check. If a pilot doesn't pass his training session, will not go to the check. But if a pilot is ready for the check and doesn't pass the check, will not fly again. So he'll be grounded until the next exam. So these are the thresholds a professional pilot should pass to fly the airplane.
How often do they fail? Yeah, but let's just say you take a pilot that's been flying for 10 years. Do they get lax and does it cause?
Okay, so most of the fails are for the beginners. At the beginning, you're coming from another domain. You pass into this new job, a new environment, yeah. New universe, actually. And you have to confirm. There's no tolerance for not for mistakes. There's no tolerance for indiscipline. There's no tolerance for a button from SOPs, from the standard calls, from the task sharing and things like this. So the main group of pilots that fails, they are the beginners, because you have to train them into this new universe. And the second group, it's the pilots, maybe, I don't know, maybe 5-10 years, when they become complacent. Yeah. They now know the aircraft, they have the enough knowledge level, the nav level is good, they have a good skill. Yeah, they communicate well, things like this, they know how to make decisions, but they become complacent, they don't learn anymore, and they are just, as I said, they are just floating. And this is not possible, because the minimum mark to pass an exam in aviation is 7.5 or 8. In my company is 8 out of 10. So if you're not above the standard, if you're not performing well, getting a mark of 7.5 out of 10, you're not flying the aircraft. You're not anymore in the cockpit. So this makes this puts lots of pressure, especially on the instructors first. And you need to standardize the training for that to obtain a good standard of instructors and examiners first. And then they puts a lot of pressure on the pilots themselves. Because if you fail one exam, it's not a big deal, but everybody will know it. You'll be grounded. You have to do a refreshing training, and you go back in the simulator again for training and then for a check session. So You're not getting paid. You're not productive in this period. So it's a pressure. It's not a punishment, but it's a pressure on the professional pilot.
Yeah. Do you find it that, I mean, obviously it's mandated, right? It's not an option. There's not a choice. You know, one of the things that I find interesting in training is, I believe, and your training is a little different because it's very much competency training. And, but the people that are very good at what they do can always be better. And they tend to rest on their success. You see what I'm saying? So it's sometimes difficult to get, well, for the lack of a better term, the old pro to want to train. Yet getting them sharper and getting them better at their craft is incredibly valuable to a company. So I guess if I was to put this into a question to you, is there, even though it's mandatory, is there resentment, or do they look forward to it? And do you teach new things every year too? Like, is there new skills that come out, or is it, I mean, I assume the planes are pretty similar and don't change much, but I could be wrong.
The plane doesn't change much, but the SOP operating the plane changes a lot. There are new, look, every mishap, every incident, every accident, God forbid, happening in the world right now, we know that day about it. And there are lessons to be learned from that incidents or accidents. And every time there's a change in the SOP, you can change the task sharing in the cockpit, you can change the procedures itself. So it's not that easy, because otherwise in 10 years, if you fly the same airplane with the same SOP, yeah, everybody get a little bit comfortable. But as a professional pilot, you're not for a minute maybe comfortable. If I'm drinking a coffee in my cockpit at 12,000 meters, 39,000 feet, I would drink a coffee, but my eyes, I can have a chat with my colleague. But my eyes are always at the instruments. And the first, because I'm in a nice, comfortable environment, it's warm or cold the way I want, it's light the way I want. But outside the window, just a feet away from my shoulder, is minus 70 degrees, and the aircraft flies with 450 miles per hour. So any moment something wrong can happen. If you are not prepared for the worst every time, if you don't have a plan, or if you are not trained properly, because I can pick every incident or accident in the history of aviation, and I will show you there's a lack of training in that company, or the lack of training on those pilots. The way they got the license, the way they were trained, the training experience of the airline itself, it's very important. So if you want to maintain a high level of training, a high level of proficiency in your pilots, you have to train them properly. To train not just the, we call them technical skills, but you have to train the non-technical skills, their attitude, the way they communicate, the way they building their decisions, things like this.
If I may add, please. One way to keep people coming to training and wanting to come to training and not saying what is to keep it regular. For instance, in aviation, even the best pilots in the world, they know that they're scheduled for the next training in, I don't know, September and then in April. And they don't either. Now, in many companies, training doesn't happen for a while. And then you and I are listed to go to a training. And of course, say, hey, what's wrong with us?
But yeah, exactly.
What's wrong? Why do you have against me? Did I do something wrong that you sent me to training? Now, if it's occasional, that might come to their minds, and then you have to explain, no, you're actually good, and it's for premium, it's for whatever. But if it's regular, then it's, if it's like brushing teeth, if it's like having the annual or biannual performance evaluations, then yeah, when is the next one? The next one is September, or final go. Of course, we hope it's interesting, but it's not like why do I have to go? You have to go because it's a natural part of what you do. The environment is changing so fast, especially. In these years.
Yeah. If I was going to take what I've heard from both of you and distill it into an idea for the audience, is their companies need to create a culture of training.
Yes.
The culture of training is an expectation of training, and it's not optional training, it's required training. And that training isn't just about what they functionally do. It's also about how they communicate, how they work together. Maybe use the word culture of the organization in terms of how things operate, which I think are great lessons. Octavian, I think it's very interesting you're here, and I'm really happy you're here. What our audience doesn't know is in Romania, you're actually a very well-known author and a successful author. So why don't you take a moment and tell us about the name of the book, which for my audience, just so you know, will surprise you what it actually means. It's a cool name. And why this was so intriguing to you.
Yeah. So let me make a segue into that from our previous point, which is having people come to training, right? Well, of course, you have to make the training interesting. And of course, you have to have a positive association to it. But then the challenge is, how do you make it interesting? And for me, it was fascinating to keep hearing throughout the years Emil's stories about aviation. What does the captain do in this situation? What happened? And what can you learn? And we thought, hey, it's very much valuable for anybody who's piloting a team or something. So we decided to write this book. Dark cockpit actually is an aviation term. You know, the cockpit of the plane is usually dark. It has some ambient lighting. The worst thing that can happen is if all lights of different colors appear on the door. That's bad. That means engines on fire. So dark cockpit actually is a good thing. It's when things go smooth and then there's no warning light, there's no caution light, there's no system on off, there's no system. And we said, hey, that's what we want for our life, whether you work in sales, in finance, in operation. We want things to go smoothly. We don't want a situation like the spring of 2020 when COVID hit and sales dropped and we had to do these things. And the whole book is tapping into this aviation stories and principles and translating them into actionable advice that people can use. And because it's something new, because it's from a field where standards are high and training is high, it keeps people very close to training. So the challenge obviously is to find new sources. If you deliver the same old slides, same old stories, same old example that everyone knows, it's no surprise that people don't want to come to training. But the challenge is to find something new. And there is a lot of learning to be taken from aviation. It's a super huge standard. And what we found when I was inviting Emil to speak to conferences before COVID, I wanted to be in the room just to feel the room and I was always happy that no matter who it was in the room, whether it was managers or new employees or sales or whatever, they were fascinated. They had questions. They had interesting things to say. So, hey, this has to be in the book. And today it's available. Yeah.
You know, it was interesting when I heard the name Dark Cockpit. I was thinking, well, it'll be interesting. They'll cast Matt Damon. They'll cast Tom Hanks as the pilot.
Or me.
Yeah. Actually, there are a number of books about aviation, but this is in a way the first of its kind because it's not just Emil's biography. Here's the 10 best things that happened to me. Read them over a weekend or over a holiday. It's not a book about principles and SOP, standard operating procedures. It's not a book about accidents. There are many books about accidents that go into detail about what happened and why. But it's a book that has the aim on the people who want to be better in their lives, whatever they're doing, and provides them with inspiring ideas on three main topics. One is communication, second one is leadership, and third one is what we call crisis management or how to be in control, how to stay in control. So it's a little bit, in a way, it's a mix of things, and probably that's why it's doing well, because those readers who want to read some fascinating stories from aviation, they can do that. But they have the message right after that. Here's the learning. Here's what you can take. Here's an assessment. Here's a checklist for you. And then for those people who are, some people are impatient, just give me the advice. If they can go to some chapters and they'll have the advice that they can use right away. And we've placed a lot of ideas that people can discuss with their people. If they have a team that they can discuss in a meeting, for instance, some cases that they can place on the table, have the group discuss, and then arrive at some conclusions, and then say, hey, by the way, here's how it's actually done in aviation. What can we learn from that? So it's a mix. And I think we can all agree, and all our listeners agree, that yeah, training has to be mandatory, but you have to be innovative and creative in the way you involve people and you engage them and you provide the know-how.
Yeah. Emil, if you could maybe out of the communication section, maybe share a little bit that was in the book and maybe an example of something that people listening could use or try with their team. A little taste.
So as I told you before, in aviation, the communication is vital. So that means that there is no message without an answer. So if you send a message carrying an order or an action or a call to action, you have to get back the answer containing the message you sent. Because in aviation, if the air traffic controllers directs you to a point or ask you to turn right 20 degrees, you never answer, okay, or I will, or Wilco, meaning will comply. So you'll answer turning right 10 degrees. And if you want to be more specific, you go turning right 10 degrees, new heading is 300. So the air traffic controller will have information. Now imagine that the airspace is limited. If you are in a cube of, 30 miles, you can have 100 airplanes in that cube. And that airspace is crowded with aircraft flying different directions. And if you have a thunderstorm in the middle of it or on the side of it, all those aircraft, they will try to avoid the clouds using their radars. So they will be all in the same time, not just in that airspace, but in a small corridors. So in case of wrong communications, you endanger other aircraft, other pilots, other passengers. So you have to be very quick to pass the message, to acknowledge the message. It says like a challenge and response. There's no poetry there. You have no time to United 755 request. Okay, what the control will say? We say, go ahead, yeah? And you occupy too much over frequency or time on the frequency. Just pass your message. Just say what you want and the controller will agree or not, or they will guide you through a different position. So the communications is not just between between pilots or between the member of the crew, because it's vital to have that tube of metal, pressurized metal with wings at 39,000 feet with people communicating well for the sake of everybody. But you have communication between ground and the aircraft. You have between aircraft. This kind of, you develop a skill. You know on your screen, if you don't see their call sign, but you know where they are, the way they move. So you can anticipate your move. But this means that everybody should talk the same language, the language of a standard phraseology, following the rule of the right communication. Because as I told you, every time we know that from our lives, in our families, in our companies, I don't know in what domain, but when something goes wrong, the first to blame is communication or miscommunication. But for us, I told you, I can pick every incident or accident. I will show you that at least a third, if not more, they started with the wrong or with or the mishap started with a wrong communication, with a wrong call, with a wrong message, or not the best time, you know?
Well, I love the clarity of answering with exactly what they asked you to do so that they know you heard them exactly right. Because if you said, turn 10 degrees and they thought it was 15, you got a major catastrophe. So let's take what you just said, which I loved. I thought it was great. How does it apply to regular everyday work?
I'll give you an example, if I may. A manager is delegating something to their staff, for instance, and then it's here's what I'd like you to do, and then A and B and C and D. And then at the end, in many cases, we'll say, Did you understand? Nobody in the history of corporate world said, excuse me, no, I'm stupid. I didn't understand. I got it, boss. Super. And then, you know what? The boss says, I'll also send this to you by mail. Now, what happens here is that there is one message in one direction from manager to subordinate verbally. And the second time, it's also from the manager to the subordinate by this email. So what can you do as a result of this? Ask the subordinate to send the confirmation reply back to you. You can say something like, now, we've been chatting for half an hour. May I ask you to just send me a quick email with the 4 or 5 bullet points that you'll do after that? Because this way, that is their feedback. You'll know, were they paying attention? Did they understand? Did they not understand? Is the summary good, or are they missing the main point or two of the main points or whatever? So in this way, you'll get to see what's in their mind if they do the repeating of the message, rather than, you know what, I'll send you the slides too. No, because it's still in the same direction and we still have no response to whatever happened in the mind of the other person. So that's one thing we can do. And unfortunately, in business or in companies and NGOs, too often the feedback is superficial. It's okay, got it, thank you. Okay, thank you. No, but let's make the feedback more meaningful. And this also works if we are on the receiving end. So if you ask me to do something, or if you say, Octavian, let's meet tomorrow at Starbucks at 2 o'clock, I shouldn't say okay. Okay, I should rather say, okay, Evan, see you tomorrow at 2 o'clock at the Starbucks downtown. Thank you. So I repeated the message. It didn't cost me too much more time, but at least we now both know which Starbucks, which coffee, what time, and so on.
And if I may add just one small thing, in aviation, nobody, the communications is personal. If I'm, I have 16,000 hours, I'm the tie-breaking examiner flying with a fresh new green co-pilot. And if I don't understand the frequency, I don't care if he understands better than me that specific message. But if one of us, we don't understand the message, we just call for repeat. Please say again. And the frequency will be read again, will be transmitted again. So we are both on the same page all the time. Because in other parts of in other industries, if you don't understand, you'll be afraid to say, look, I didn't understand the last part. Can you repeat it, please? Well, I didn't get exactly the idea what you're asking for, because you can ask for, I want things to be done properly. Okay, but what properly means? What are your expectations for me? So it's important that communications to be impersonal, to talk about the goal, to talk about what you want, instead of talking or looking for to blame afterwards. You didn't tell me what your expectations, what is that doesn't mean properly for you, things like this.
Yeah, I first of all like everything you're saying, and I would just add another thing, which is for a leader to be able to be supportive of someone asking a question. So to create the culture that it's okay to say, I don't understand. Because I think what Octavian said about no one says, I don't got it, because it says I'm stupid and I couldn't figure it out. And I think dead on right, but to, you know, create safety so people can say, I don't got it, you know, it is huge.
Yeah, because if you create a two-way communication, as Octavian said, you place some responsibility on your employees' shoulders, because they are there for a reason. If you want just people to follow your lead, and you are like a big leader showing everybody what to do, I'm not sure that it will be efficient. But if you place some responsibility on people's shoulders, the way, because they are there for a reason. In my aircraft, there's no empty space. If I have a place, if I have a jump seat for a first officer, he's there for a reason. If I have a cabin crew occupying a seat, he or she is there for a reason. There's nobody in plus in my aircraft. So I place some responsibility on their shoulders as well.
Yeah, very cool. Unfortunately, we are coming to the end, and I think it would be great for people to know a little bit about how they can reach you. and you know, how to get the book. You're very clearly interesting and intelligent people, and I can see why you do a lot of speaking. So maybe talk a little bit about that too, would be great.
Sure. So the webpage of the book is darkcockpitbook.com, no hyphens, no dots anywhere. And if you go on that page, you can download and read for free chapter 5 of the book. It is 12 chapters, so you can read chapter 5, which is quite a nice chapter. No obligations there. If you'd like to get the book and buy the whole book, just go on amazon.com or wherever and just enter Dark Cockpit. You'll get the book, Kindle or paperback. You can reach us. There's a contact form on the webpage, but you can also find us on LinkedIn with our names, Octavian Pantish or Captain Emil Dobrovolsky. We'd love to be in touch. And if anybody has any questions as a follow-up to what we discussed, we would be glad to help.
And your website is darkcockpitbook.com.
That's right. Thank you very much, Evan.
Okay, I'm going to ask this question, and it's completely irrelevant to everyone listening, but is it available in Romanian too, or is it only available in English?
Well, first we wrote it in Romanian. We launched it in November 2019, and it sold very, 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 very well. I mean, within months and then COVID came in February 2020. So we didn't not even finish our tour and events, but already about 4,000 copies were sold, and companies were buying it for employees and or for customers, and people were buying it for their teenage kids or for parents and everything. And people kept telling us, "Hey, you should translate it and make it available globally, because aviation is a global thing and the know-how is globally valid," which is what we did. And the English version came out in June 2021 and is doing very well.
Well, that's I feel honored, because I'm right here when we're recording. When this gets released and when it's recording are two different times. Yeah. It's July. So, you know, I just say something. I found the conversation very interesting. But what I think is really interesting is sometimes you have to be out of your normal context to learn something. And yeah, that it's easier when you're envisioning something that's not what you do every day to kind of just hit you over the head and say, wow, and apply it. So it seems like, you know, to me, a really interesting story from the perspective of, you know, you're in a world where training is an absolute necessity. And I would argue we're all in that world. We just don't know it. So it sounds like a fascinating book, one which I shall now order and read, although I really wish you had an audio version, because I'm very dyslexic.
We plan to have an audio version before the end of this year. So
I will probably wait for that. Let me know when it comes out, because
we will, Evan. We will.
Yeah. Yeah. I love listening to books. Love listening to books. So we always end the show with one tip. If you had one tip for our audience, what would that one tip be?
Let me be the first.
Go ahead, Emil.
So if you are a professional and you love doing your job, you like to perform. So in order to perform well, myself, I told you, 16,000 hours, and I spend more than 6,000 hours in the simulators, full flight simulators around the globe for different types of aircraft. And I noticed that after a while, when you get to a good level of knowledge, skill, attitude as a professional pilot, you get complacent. So the moment I feel comfortable in a domain, I switch something. I read about something else. I'm reading all the articles about aviation. Octavian opened my eyes in different fields. And I'm a speaker now, thanks to him, because I was doing things technically. I was checking pilots based on the syllabus, which is written, things like this. But now my eyes are opening to a different perspective on my job. So if you want to perform well as a professional, change the point of view, listen and read books, which is tangent, you know, with your job, and stay alert all the time, like a pilot.
Good tip. Octavian, do you have one too? We're going to give people two tips at the end. This is a sure. Tip record.
Mine is one for our audience. If they work in training, they probably have people say, I don't want to go to training. I'm good already. What do you tell those people? Tell these people the following thing. You're missing opportunities if you're not prepared. You cannot anticipate what will happen. Some bad things might happen, like the COVID, some opportunities, some good opportunities might come your way. If you're not prepared, you won't pursue them. And it's too late to learn whatever you need to learn in the 12th hour. So make training as fitness, as brushing teeth, as taking showers, as making it as natural, and invest half an hour a day in that. Reading a book, reading a PDF, do an electronic, whatever resources are available, but invest half an hour per day, because it might be one of the best investments you make.
I totally agree. And I've really taken the concept of being a lifelong learner, which is something I've always been, but I never really labeled myself that, as being a requirement of who I ever hire.
Yeah.
And I just ask people, you know, what do you do to educate yourself? Do you read books? What do you do? And it's amazing how many people do nothing.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, not just talking about work, but life in general. The commitment to yourself is self-improvement in all aspects of your life. And to me, you know, look at, I run a podcast, Training Unleashed. I believe in unleashing training. I believe in personal growth, personal development. It's hugely important. You guys have added to my knowledge. I want to thank you both for that. I want to thank the C-Suite TV and radio for their support. And I really want to thank the audience. This show is starting to really grow and gather a big audience. And without the audience, I wouldn't have such nice guests as I have today. So thank the audience. And again, thank you, gentlemen, for being here on the show.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.